listening nightly to our favorite show, radio. Oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again, radio. I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we welcome you to Suspense. But first, on the lighter side, let's head on down to Summerfield and spend some time with the Great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve was created by Harold Perry while still working on Fibber McGee and Molly in Chicago. The character became so popular that, in August of 1941, Gildersleeve broke away for his own Sunday night program on NBC. Gildersleeve is thought to be the first radio program based on a supporting character from another show. Gildersleeve became a character in his own right, grew into a specialized radio format, and soon made the McGees and Wistful Vista part of the distant, nostalgic past. As the program approached its 10th birthday, Harold Perry got ready to retire and did so. Into Perry's shoes came Willard Waterman, whose interpretation was so much like the original Gildy, it was frightening. For the 1954-55 season, the program was a 15-minute daily offering. The program returned to 30 minutes in 1955, where it continued on Thursdays until 1958. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with The Great Gildersleeve and War Bond Drive from September of 1943. Another classic show from the golden age of radio, here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Yeah. The Kraft Cheese Company will also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night. Present each week at this time Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Whedon and Sam Moore. Well, the Great Gildersleeve's vacation, like everyone else's, has come to an end, and our hero, full of new health and vigor, is about to take up once more the task of guarding, purifying, and distributing Summerfield water supply. He's at breakfast now with Leroy and Marjorie, but as he crunches methodically on the sixth piece of toast, he looks and feels every cubic inch of him a water commissioner.
More coffee, Unc?
Well, since it's not rationed any longer, my dear, I suppose, as a patriotic duty, yes.
My only regret is that I have but one cup to give for my country.
That'll do, Leroy. The water commissioner's got to be on the alert in these war times, you know.
Why?
Well, water is one of the important sinews of war, young man. What kind of contribution could our citizens make to the war effort if there were no water to wash in?
Yeah, wouldn't that be terrible?
Leroy, I believe you enjoy being dirty. Do you consider that shirt clean enough to wear to school?
Sure. Besides, it's the only one I've got.
What about your face and hands? Are they clean?
Oh, sure.
Look at his ears.
Who asked you?
Never mind.
Well, what did you have to butt in for?
I didn't butt in.
You did so?
I did not.
Quiet. I'll not have the breakfast table made a bedlam with this infernal bickering. Is that clear, Leroy?
Yes, sir.
I hope it is.
Now, Marjorie, don't you try to sound so virtuous. You're just as much to blame as Leroy, if not more so. You're old enough to know a little better.
Tea.
Leroy, come here and let me inspect your ears.
Aw, gee, Unc.
Come here, young man.
Oh, for corn's sake. They're perfectly clean, Unc. I washed them till they hurt.
When?
Day before yesterday.
Let me see them.
Oh, you don't have to take them apart.
Just as soon as you've finished your breakfast, you go upstairs and wash your ears properly, young man.
Tee-hee.
Yeah, Marjorie, your whole attitude has got to show a big improvement this year, or I'll be forced to take drastic steps.
Gee, what kind of drastic steps?
I don't know.
Gosh.
I've been thinking that possibly I should go and speak to your principal at school about you.
Miss Goodwin?
Well, I believe that's her name, unless it slipped my recollection. Oh, yes, Goodwin is the name, or something like that.
Are you kidding?
Leroy, I do not care for that expression.
Oh, gosh, Unc, you went to call on her last week and came home holding hands with yourself.
You go wash your ears, young man.
Okay, okay.
And stick in your shirt tail.
Okay.
That darn kid. You'd think from the way he talks that he was associated with bad companions. But what companions I see are angels alongside of him.
Excuse me, Mr. Gildersleeve.
No, no more toast, thank you, Bertie. I've enjoyed a plentiful sufficiency.
You sure have, Mr. Gildersleeve. There ain't another slice of bread in this here house.
Oh, well, you can't run the waterworks on nothing but water. What is it you wanted, Bertie?
I just found the morning paper under the hedge, and I noticed your name was in it.
My name? Where?
Where? Where is it, Bertie?
Right here.
Oh, here it is. Welcome home, Commissioner Gildersleeve.
Well, that's very friendly of Mr. Powers. I must renew my subscription to his paper. What else does it say, Marjorie?
This morning, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve will return to his desk as water commissioner, following what we trust has been a relaxing vacation. If it wouldn't be too much trouble, we hope you will shortly find time and energy to do something about the taste of Summerfield's water supply, which has deteriorated badly in the past few weeks.
Why, let me see that newspaper.
Wait a minute, wait, there's more. The water now has reached the point where it has a definite taste of onions, a condition which in our father's generation was attributed to the presence of water moccasins.
Water moccasins? Why, that's libel.
Then it just says, how about some action, Commissioner?
By George, he'll get some action, all right. Where's my hat, Bertie?
On the hall tree, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Thank you. Well, I'm off.
What you gonna do, Mr. Gildersleeve? Go out to the reservoir and look for water moccasins?
No, I'm going downtown and look for a rattlesnake named Powers.
Oh, Lord, you're not going to hurt him.
Well, no, but I'll write him a letter he'll never dare to print. Morning.
Morning, Mr. Commissioner.
Morning.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Morning. Good morning, Mayor. fine morning.
Yes. Pleasant vacation, I hope.
Oh, yes, yes. Very pleasant. But glad to be back on the job.
Your secretary will tell you that I've called a little meeting in my office this morning, just the heads of departments. 9:30. Hope you can make it.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll be there.
Good. See you then.
What does he want with me? Powers is back to this. Powers and his so-called newspaper. Well, by George, if there's anything wrong with that water, I'll drink it.
No, I'm wearing it up now, Mabel.
Still on the telephone.
Well, I'm wearing it up now. I wore it down for a few days, but then I decided to look better up, so now I'm wearing it up. Of course, Herbie likes it down, but I've decided now I don't like Herbie.
Bessie!
Oh, I'll call you back, Mabel. Mr. Gildersleeve, you're back from your vacation.
And you're right where I left you 2 weeks ago, on the telephone.
I know. The service is terrible. I guess it's the war. I was saying only the other day that...
Could I interrupt your analysis of the situation long enough to take a letter?
Oh, yes. I'll just get my book.
Letter to Mr. Frank Powers, editor of the Summerfield Indicator. Dear Miss... Where are you going?
My book. I have it here somewhere.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh, I found it. It was right under the flower pot all the time.
Naturally. Let's see now. Where was I?
Oh, it leaked on it.
Bessie, I'm trying to dictate a letter.
I'm sorry.
The editor of the Indicator. Dear sir. Now what?
I have to sharpen a pencil.
Bessie, have you ever thought of going into war work? You'd make a wonderful bottleneck.
You just say that. There. I'm ready now.
Well, I'm not ready. I'm all out of the mood. Doggone it, now I gotta go back and get mad all over again. The water tastes bad, huh? Man says the water tastes bad. Oh, it tastes bad, does it? Bessie, bring me a glass of water.
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yellow journal. Talk about leaving a bad taste in the mouth. Powers ought to read some of his own editorials.
Here you are, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, paper cups now, huh?
Mm-hmm. We got those while you were away.
We'll just see now.
Do you like it, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Bessie, you're my witness. I never tasted finer drinking water in my life. Cool, clear, and refreshing.
That's what the man said.
What man?
The man who brings the bottles every week.
Bottles? Bessie, what are you doing with bottled water in this office?
Well, the tap water got to tasting kind of funny, so I have them put in a cooler.
Get that thing out of here. Hello. Oh, tell His Honor I'll be right down. Sorry to keep him waiting. Well, I guess I've got to face it. Bessie, get that water cooler out of sight. If anybody wants me, I'm going down to the mayor's office.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, Bessie, what is it?
I just remembered there was some message I was to give you when you came in. Let's see now, what was it?
Bessie, I'm in a hurry.
Oh, yes, the mayor called. He wants you to come down to his office.
That Bessie, I'm going to have to let her go.
Gildersleeve, you know all these gentlemen, I believe. Judge Hooker.
Oh, sure.
Hello, Gildy.
Mr. Halloran, Mr. Peel. Ah, and here's Mr. Powers. Now we can proceed.
Morning, Mr. Mayor. Well, Gildersleeve, we had a little notice about you in our editorial column this morning.
I saw it.
No hard feelings, I hope.
You'd like to know my feelings. Just step outside with me for a moment.
All right. Let's get down to business now, gentlemen.
Let's be sure you don't make any charges you can't prove, Powers. That's all. There's such a thing as libel, you know.
Yes, and there's such a thing as freedom of the press.
Come, gentlemen, we have important business. I brought you all together here to discuss something that reflects serious disgrace upon the town of Summerfield.
Mr. Mayor, if you're referring to the water department...
Nobody's talking about the water department. I'm talking about the third war loan drive and Summerfield's part in it. Frankly, our showing so far is way below what it should be.
I think there's a reason for that.
The reason is that we're all lying down on the job.
Speak for yourself, Powers.
No, I think the reason is we're not properly organized. We've got to figure out where the money is and go after it. Now, the First National of Summerfield. Does anybody know how much they bought?
No, you're all wet there, Judge. It isn't the banks. They're only a drop in the bucket. It's the people who've got the money. It's the $25 and the $50 bonds that add up.
All right, how are you going to sell them? You know so much. How would you go about it?
Well, you all know what they're doing over in Riverton. They've pledged themselves to sell enough bonds to build a gunboat, the USS Riverton. And they've already gone halfway to their quota. It's working over there. That's why the Indicator started this campaign to get Summerfield to build the USS Summerfield.
Which is nothing but a publicity stunt for the Indicator, and you know it.
Oh, now, Mr. Gildersleeve, I think you owe Mr. Powers an apology.
Powers owes me an apology.
I suggest we forget our personal differences and get on with the bond drive. The way it's been going so far, the USS Summerfield is going to turn out to be a rowboat.
Well, I refuse to believe that Summerfield is any less patriotic than Riverton. How about it, gentlemen? Are we going to take this lying down?
No, by golly.
No, certainly not.
That's what I say, Gildy.
Then let's pitch in. I'm at your service, Mr. Mayor.
That's the spirit I like to see in my commissioners, Gildersleeve. Now, I've appointed Powers here as chairman in charge of the whole drive.
What?
And I'm asking each of you to serve under him as sub-chairman. He'll assign the territories you're to cover and so forth. Anything you'd like to add, Mr. Powers?
No, except to say that we're really going to try from now on to make this an all-out drive. We're asking all businesses, as well as the schools, to close at noon, beginning today.
I've already sent out instructions to that effect.
So that everybody can get out and sell bonds. And that means everybody.
You hear that, gentlemen? Everybody.
And tomorrow night, there'll be a rally, in which you'll all be expected to take part.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Gildersleeve.
I think I may say that I'm as good an American as anybody here.
Nobody questions that, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I've always done my part, and I'll continue to do so. I'll go out in the street and sell bonds. But I must decline to serve on any committee or appear on any platform with the Honorable Chairman.
Guilty!
Until he withdraws certain false and malicious charges made about me this morning in the public prints. Good day, gentlemen.
Who's that? Who's that?
Just me. Hello, Marjorie.
What are you doing home at this time of day, Unky?
Office is closed. I have to go out and sell bonds door to door.
Oh, you poor darling. On such a hot day, too.
Well, it's got to be done, my dear. There's no use spoiling my lunch over it.
No, of course not. There's a mail for you.
That'll spoil my lunch for sure.
Here you are.
Bills and circulars. There's no time of the month to be sending out bills or circulars either. If I didn't... Oh, what's this? Well, yes, well, what do you know about that?
Sounded pretty good from here. What is it?
Oh, nothing really. Gratitude is such an unusual thing that, well, I'll read it to you. It's from that Miss Goodwin, Leroy's principal.
Oh.
No, nothing like that.
No.
Just a nice letter, my dear.
Yes.
Dear Mr. Gildersleeve, I've just learned the true motive behind your call on me last week. You need not have gone to such pains to spare my feelings. A progressive teacher soon learns to expect opposition from some of the parents, but it's seldom she has the good fortune to have one of them rise so generously to her defense as you did. I'm very grateful, believe me, and hope soon to have a chance to thank you in some more personal way. Sincerely yours. Isn't that nice?
Sure, but I don't get it.
Well, some busybodies objected to her being put in as principal.
Oh.
They delegated me to take steps. But as soon as I called on her, I could see at a glance she was a fine educator. So I told her to pay no attention to them.
Oh.
You know, I think I ought to go over and see her this afternoon. Thank her for this note. Don't you think so?
Gosh, no. Why should you?
Well, gratitude is such a rare thing, my dear. It should be encouraged.
But, Unc, I thought you were going to sell bonds.
Bonds? Oh. Well, this is right on the way to my territory.
Bet you never make it.
Yeah.
I've run now. Goodbye, dear, and be careful.
Yeah, don't worry about your old uncle.
I'll see you at supper.
Let's see now. What did she say? I'm very grateful, believe me, and hope soon to have a chance to thank you in some more personal way. Well, I think I'll give that lady a chance to make good on that promise. School's closed. She ought to be home.
Why, Mr. Gildersleeve, what a pleasant surprise. Come in.
Thank you. I got your note, Miss Goodwin, and I thought I'd drop around.
Oh, well, when I heard what you'd done, I simply had to write to you.
It was really nothing. Anyone interested in education would have done the same thing.
Oh, well, I don't believe that. I think you were very brave and wonderful to do it.
You do? Well, I think you're a very wonderful grammar school principal.
Oh, thank you.
No, I mean that. I was going to come and see you anyway. I wanted to talk to you about my nephew. Yes, he's in your school.
Oh, well, I'll be glad to help in any way I can. Come in and sit down, won't you?
Well, I can't stay very long. No, not very long. I got to sell some bonds this afternoon. Well, well, what's all this? An art exhibition?
Oh, no. Now, those are posters the children at school have done for the bond drive. They're going to distribute them all over town this afternoon.
Oh, very clever work.
Oh, are you interested in painting?
Am I? I've got every art volume ever put out by the Book of the Month Club.
Oh, really? Well, then you'll appreciate this poster here. I think it's got some of the feeling of Grant Wood.
Oh, yes, I can see what you mean.
Remarkable chiaroscuro, too, for a child. Don't you think so?
Oh, yes, yes. Remarkable chiaroscuro, yes.
Here's one that's quite futuristic. The child told me these were supposed to be airplanes.
These?
Yes.
Very poor, in my opinion. No wing flaps.
Oh, my. You certainly are refreshing, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Refreshing?
Mm-hmm. Most men are afraid of painting. They think of it as art, with a capital A. They're afraid to have an opinion one way or another.
That's not my way, Miss Goodwin. Why, if Rembrandt himself was to walk in here and ask me what I thought of his painting, I'd tell him straight from the shoulder.
Rembrandt is wonderful, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's what I tell him.
Have you ever tried to paint, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Paint? No, not really. I used to sketch a bit in my younger days.
Well, why didn't you keep on with it? You might have become a great painter.
No, I don't think so. I can never get the nose in the right place. But you know something? If I could paint, I'll bet you'd make a wonderful model.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, you don't mean that.
Oh, yes, I do, Miss Goodman. You've got the chiaroscuro. And you got plenty of it, too.
Mr. Gildersleeve, I think we'd better talk about your nephew.
Oh, he can wait. Someday when we have lots of time.
Well, let's sit down, shall we, if we can find a place? Everything's awfully messy with all these posters.
Well, the sofa's all empty.
Yes, well, you take that. I'll sit here in the little rocker.
Oh, not very sociable.
Oh, excuse me. Well, hello.
Well, Unc, for Pete's sake.
Leroy.
Aha!
I'm helping Miss Goodwin.
So this is your nephew, Mr. Gildersleeve. He's one of our best little workers.
He's a spy at heart.
I'm not spying, Unc. I just came here to get some posters to take around to the stores. Didn't I, Miss Goodwin?
Oh, trying to get in right with the principal, eh?
Well, what are you doing?
I'll see you later, young man. Goodbye, Miss Goodwin.
And Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh,
hello, Peavy.
Be right with you. Just finishing up a prescription here. How are you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Peavy, I'm tired. I thought I'd just drop in for a moment and rest my bones, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Sit down there at the counter. Up a little late last night?
No, just tired. It's this bond drive. House to house stuff, you know. very wearing.
No, you've been out soliciting.
Yeah, that's it. Haven't actually started yet, but I get tired just thinking about it.
I know how it is. Whenever I hear they're starting a new drive, I lay in a good stock of footies.
Say, you wouldn't want to buy a bond, would you, Peavy?
Well, tell you about
That's me. All right. This isn't my territory anyway. Just thought I might sell one while I'm sitting here.
Well, I'd like to give you my trade, Mr. Gillespie, but the fact is you're a little late. Your nephew Leroy was in here and signed me up at the crack of dawn.
That kid is everywhere. You know something, Peavy? Maybe I shouldn't say this, but I'm getting tired of this war. I'm getting tired of hearing about it.
Well, I guess we all are, but...
I'm getting tired of a lot of things. Getting tired of these energetic women. Always doing things. Always winning the war and making posters. That's not what women are for.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
I mean it. I like a woman who's a little old-fashioned. I like a woman who isn't too busy to, well, be charming. You know. I like a woman who's feminine. I like a woman who...
You just like women.
No, no. It happens you're wrong, Peavy. I'm a one-woman man.
Well, maybe you are at that. Tell me, do you ever hear from her?
From who?
Mrs. Ransom. When is she coming back?
Who said anything about Mrs. Ransom?
Well, I'm sorry. My mistake.
Yeah. You're barking up the wrong tree, Peavy. That's all over and done with. Yep. That chapter in my life is a closed book. But I might just go back and take a peek.
Hi, Unc.
Leroy, are you following me? What are you doing here?
I brought Mr. Peavy a poster for his window. What are you doing here? I thought you were going to go out and sell bonds.
What I do is my affair, young man.
I'll tell teacher.
All right, I'm going, Legree.
Mr. Gildersleeve, will we see you at the rally tomorrow night?
No, Peavy. You will not see me at any rally conducted by Mr. Powers. I'll win this war my own way.
Of this great state and of this great municipality of Summerfield. Yes, I say to you, my friends, I say to you, civilization today is looking to us. Not to you, not to me, but to all of us. Are we going to fail it in this, its hour of need? What is the answer?
You better wind it up, Judge. They're going to sleep on you out there.
I'll tell you the answer. The answer is no. 1,000 times no. Not once. Not twice. Not 3 times. Not 4 times. But 1,000 times no.
You'll never wake him up that way, Judge.
In the words of that great statesman and scholar, whose fame will live forever enshrined in the hearts of his fellow countrymen, but whose name at the moment escapes me.
For Pete's sake. Huh? Will you give somebody else a chance?
Well, as the horse thief remarked when they hung the fatal noose around his neck, I see my time is short. Before I close, I would just like to leave with you one thought. Buy war bonds. Buy all you can. Not one bond. Not 2 bonds. Not 3 bonds.
Thank you, Judge Horace Hooker. Thank you. Thank you very much, Judge. I know we're all going to profit by what the judge has had to say here tonight.
Say, Frank.
What is it, Judge?
Look who just came in.
Gildersleeve. Oh, what do you know?
Why, the old sorehead. I thought he wasn't coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, please. This wasn't exactly on the program, but I'd like to call on somebody now. Somebody you all know. Summerfield's popular water commissioner, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. Would you say a few words, Gildy, please?
Yeah, come on, Gildy, come on.
That's the way. Make way for him there, folks. Make way for the commissioner, that's it. Help him up on the platform, somebody, please.
Wait a minute. I'll give him a hand.
A couple of you fellas down front there, get behind him in boots. Come on.
Now, wait a minute, Gildy. We need a couple of more volunteers here. That's it.
Thank you, sir. All together now. Heave!
Steady, steady. Oh, today, sir.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, folks, that Gildersleeve and I have had our little differences from time to time. We had one this week when my paper cast doubt on the flavor of Summerfield's water supply, of which the commissioner is justly proud. We said it tasted bad. Since then, I've been informed that this is a temporary condition caused by natural phenomena beyond the control of any man. And the water is already, if possible, more delicious than ever. Will that be a sufficient retraction, Commissioner? Or do you want me to print it in the Indicator?
There's more people here than read the Indicator. I'm satisfied.
All right, then, Gildy. Go ahead. Floor is yours. I hope it'll hold you.
Well, folks, I don't know what I'm doing up here. I'm certainly not going to make a speech. I haven't got one written, and if I had, I'd tear it up. I just want to tell you about something that happened to me yesterday. And if it makes you feel the way it made me feel, we won't need any speeches, any of us. I suppose everybody here at this rally has been out canvassing this week. I got around to my district yesterday afternoon. A little late, but at least I got around to it. And I'll admit I was feeling pretty darn patriotic about it, too, giving my valuable time that way. I marched up to the first house, and I knocked on the door. Pretty soon it opened. It was a woman. I said, "How do you do? You're the lady of the house, I presume?"
"Yes."
"Mrs. Kirk, is it?"
"Yes, that's right."
"Well, Mrs. Kirk, I'm Mr. Gildersleeve. I'm calling in connection..."
"Excuse me, please. I've got something on the stove. I'm afraid it's boiling over. Come in, won't you? I'll be right back."
"Oh." So I stepped inside. She had a very small place there. Couldn't have been more than three or four rooms. There was a child playing on the floor in the living room. A little shaver about two, I guess. I said to him, "Hello there. What's your name?" I had a little conversation with him. Nice little boy. Presently, the woman came back from the kitchen.
"Well, I'm so sorry."
"Not at all. I was just talking with your son here. Fine lad."
"Oh, goodness, that's my grandson."
"Oh, well, it's hard to believe. Such a young grandmother. Mrs. Kirk, I'm here in connection with a war bond drive."
"Well, Mr. Gildersleeve..."
"Yes, I know. You've bought bonds. We all have. Personally, I've been investing all I can spare regularly. But are we doing enough? Are we doing all we can?"
"Well, I try. You see, I'm..."
I know. We all try. That is, we think we do. We put up with our little inconveniences, rationing and so on. We buy a bond now and then when the spirit moves us. But do we make any real sacrifices? Just ask yourself, Mrs. Kirk, do you ever think of the boys at the front and what they're going through?"
"Yes, I do. I think of it day and night because my boy is one of them."
"Oh."
"I try to do what I can, but it's a little difficult. You see, my daughter-in-law lives with me now. She works and I take care of Bobby while she's away all day. No, Bobby, dear, take that out of your mouth, honey. Of course, we have Robert's allotment every month, but that still isn't very much to go around."
"Mrs. Kirk, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have come barging in here like this, telling you what you ought to do."
"Oh, no, now, you mustn't feel that way. Excuse me. Bobby, darling, why don't you run outside and play? That's a good boy. Run along."
Cute little fellow, isn't he?
Perfect image of his father. I remember when he was just that age.
"Well, I guess I'll..."
No, please don't go. I want you to understand. We want to buy bonds. I'm glad when I can buy a bond, because every time I do, I think, this is for Robert. And I think maybe it'll help to protect him and bring him back safe. It's just that, well, maybe we don't manage very well."
"Oh, I think you manage wonderfully."
"No, I never did have much of a head for figures, but you're a man. Perhaps if you didn't mind, you could look at our budget and show me how we could do more."
"Well, Mrs. Kirk, I'm no shining example myself when it comes to that."
"Well, maybe not, but you're a man, and men understand about those things. It'd only take a minute, if you don't mind."
"Well, no, only, gosh, I'd hate to have anybody look at my budget."
"Well, we want to do all we can."
"Well, she brought out her budget and made me go over it. When I saw how little she had to live on, I don't remember all the figures, but there was $35 for rent, $50 or so for groceries, the usual amounts for gas, light, and so on. Practically nothing for clothes and such. But every month, about 25% of her income was going into war bonds. I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I was so darn ashamed of myself. I got out of there as fast as I could. I didn't try to sell any more bonds that day. I went home and really dug down myself. And if everybody else in this town will do the same, we won't need any more rallies. And there won't be any question about the USS Summerfield. We'll show Riverton we can build a gunboat just as big as theirs and bigger. Yeah. Why, we'll build one big enough to sink theirs."
"Hey, wait a minute, Gildy."
"Huh?"
Summerfield and Riverton are on the same side in this war.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
Gildersleeve program this week was contributed to the Treasury's third War Loan Drive by the Kraft Cheese Company. Music was under the direction of Claude Sweet. This is Ken Carpenter inviting you to listen in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From September of 1943, it's been the Great Gildersleeve War Bond Drive. In a moment, Suspense starring Joseph Cotton as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in 1942. On the air for the next 20 years, it had many talented directors, each who brought his own mark to Suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based programs of the air. Suspense dealt in life-or-death situations. That element was usually established within the first few moments. Then, through characterization, small touches were added to heighten the sensation of impending doom. That was, in fact, what Suspense was all about, the slow tightening of the knot. Suspense was known as the Actors' Theater. People like Cary Grant, Frederick March, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Gregory Peck, Peter Lorre, and Henry Fonda headed the casts. Many top film stars asked to return for encore performances. For the fall of its first year, Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, was aboard as narrator. That continued through the Roma Wine years, with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black had disappeared by the time the program went to 60 Minutes in 1948. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Suspense and Sneak Preview, with guest star Joseph Cotton from March of 1944, another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
Roma Wines presents Suspense. Roma Wines, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is the Man in Black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you Joseph Cotton in a suspense play called Sneak Preview, which tells of a rather remarkable adventure experienced by that noted director of screen thrillers, Frank Henderson. And so, with Mr. Henderson's by far stranger-than-fiction story, as related and enacted by Joseph Cotton, we again hope to keep you in suspense. Go ahead, please, Mr. Henderson. This all began, you say, 2 weeks ago?
Yes, that's right. I just finished the final cutting and dubbing on my newest picture, Escape to Destiny. Think you'll like it, by the way. Lou Ellis
Yes, go on.
Well, I took the film east with me, and the first day I got there, we read it in the projection room for a few of the boys in the New York office. They seemed to like it pretty well.
Now that it's all over, and we're safe.
Yes?
Well, there's one thing that still worries me.
What's that?
It's Ruth. Will you marry me?
Darling, that's the one thing I've known the answer to from the very beginning.
Well, boys, there it is.
Frank, it is, but terrific. It's the best picture you've ever made.
Oh, it's great. Hitchcock will absolutely quit.
No kidding, you really think so?
I do, Frank, honestly. I think it even tops Perilous Journey. Definitely.
And it's solid box office, Frank, solid.
Well, it's all yours, boys. I can't think of anything more to do to it. We might lighten the music a little under that scene of the wine cellars. I'll get it. Hello? Who? What does he want? Okay, put him on. Hello? Yes, this is Frank Henderson. Who? I don't think I know any Captain McNeil. Oh, well, may I ask why the chief of the Security Bureau wants to... I hope there's nothing wrong. I see. All right, I'll be there.
Who was it, Frank?
Somebody at police headquarters.
Police headquarters? What's he want?
That's what I'd like to know.
Well, Mr. Henderson, my secretary tells me you were a little mystified.
Well, a little, I guess.
You never heard of any Captain McNeil?
Oh, no. It was just that I didn't think to connect you with the Captain McNeil.
Very nicely put, Mr. Henderson. Very nicely put. But you don't need to explain. There aren't so many people as you'd think who'd ever heard of any Captain McNeil. An undercover agent isn't very much good if everybody knows him.
No, I guess not.
Mr. Henderson, when I heard you were going to be in New York, I just couldn't resist meeting you.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Henderson, I'm probably your greatest living admirer.
Well, thank you.
I guess I've seen every picture of yours since the first one you directed, most of them 3 or 4 times.
I'll have to remember you in my will.
You know, you'd have made a first-class professional detective.
I'm not so sure about that. There's a lot of difference between fact and fiction, I guess.
Not so much. I've always followed the reasoning in your pictures with complete agreement.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, but with one exception.
Huh? What was that?
No, I couldn't go along with you there. It was in your fifth picture, Murder in the Morning. You remember near the end of the picture where the killer has the detective and his pal at gunpoint in an empty room?
Mm, I remember.
The friend is allowed to leave. He's helpless anyway, unless... And here was the point. Unless the detective is able to get over certain vital information to the friend in the presence of the killer, but without his knowledge. You remember?
Sure. And when the friend is leaving, the detective hands him his hat.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the hat band, he slipped a piece of paper with the information on it. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. And that's where I disagree. Although I realize it probably wasn't your fault. Probably the writer or the producer.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, that was my own idea.
It's too simple, too unimaginative, if you'll forgive me the word. No intelligent criminal would allow a thing like that to happen right under his nose.
But the way the thing was done, I thought...
Even so, how is the friend to know that this paper is under his hatband?
Oh, well, you see...
It isn't something you'd likely to notice. You don't look under your hatband every time you put on your hat.
I know, but
it's
we...
It's far too fetched. It's not true to life. It's fiction. Excuse me a moment. Hello? Yes? Yes, I see. I'll be down in just a few minutes. Pardon the interruption.
Oh, not at all, Captain. I really ought to be going. I've kept you too long.
Mr. Henderson, I wonder if you're interested in real crime.
Real crime?
Have you ever seen an actual murderer?
Well, you do make me feel like an amateur now. No, to tell you the truth, I never have.
Come on, then. It might give you an idea. It's down the hall. As a matter of fact, I've never seen this particular murderer myself.
But you know he is the murderer?
Sure. Not much like a character in one of your pictures, though. Nothing romantic or exciting.
Was he clever?
Yes, indeed. His career has been 20 years. There's never been enough evidence to convict him. There isn't even a photograph of him.
Mm.
Here we are.
But if you don't know any more than that, what charge are you holding him on?
Charge? You don't need any charge when you hold him here. There he is.
Oh, dead.
Dead, at last.
How did he die?
Shot in the back. He found him in Central Park. Well, there you are. Gregory Sarko. Murderer, spy, drug addict, and about everything else in the book.
Mm. Know who killed him?
Who knows? Who cares? There are plenty of people who'd have been happy to do it if they dared.
I suppose he had identification on him.
Sure. Bank book, wallet, a few inconsequential papers.
Is that all?
That's all. Oh, a little money, a handkerchief, a tin of aspirin.
Aspirin?
Sure. Criminals have headaches just like other people.
It was aspirin, I suppose.
We professionals may not be romantic, Mr. Henderson. We are thorough.
Oh,
yes, it was aspirin.
I remember you saying he was a drug addict. So that was all he had on him, huh?
That's right. Nothing very sensational or exciting. No clues.
What about that bank book? Was it in his own name?
Oh, he had a lot of names. Gregory Sarko was the one in the bank book. His own, by the way. Why?
Because a perfectly crazy notion has just entered my head.
For a new picture?
It could be. But, well, here am I in New York. Little time on my hands and... Well, the guy intrigues me, that's all.
A dead man intrigues
me? His life intrigues me, sure. Finding out more about it intrigues me. What's the difference? The guy's dead. What have I got to lose?
Well, now... I don't say it's likely, Mr. Henderson, but it's possible, just barely possible, that you might lose your life.
I'm not an adventurous or even a particularly courageous man, and yet suddenly I found myself engaged in what might possibly, as the captain had said, be a fairly dangerous occupation. I pored for hours over Captain McNeil's file on Sarko. He was persisting in the face of a sudden and somewhat mysterious reluctance on the part of the captain to have me do so. The next thing I did was to inquire at the bank which had issued Sarko's bank book and found out exactly nothing. I was pretty discouraged and about ready to quit when I went back to my hotel that evening.
Would you mind closing the door, please? Thank you, Mr. Henderson. My name is Edwards.
How do you... Say, what's the big idea?
No, no, Mr. Henderson. Keep away from the telephone, please.
Are you threatening me with that gun?
I regret it, Mr. Henderson. I deeply regret it, but unfortunately I cannot deny it.
Listen, this whole thing is ridiculous and melodramatic.
Mr. Henderson, why are you so interested in Gregory Sarko?
Sarko?
Yes, Sarko.
Just what, if you will forgive a B-picture expression, is your racket?
Racket? Oh, no, Mr. Henderson. I just like to make money, that's all.
Look, Mr. Edwards, or whatever your name is... If it's any of your business, and I don't see that it is, my interest in Sarko is simple curiosity. I was talking with a Captain McNeil at police headquarters. He showed me his file on Sarko.
Well, that much I'm quite aware, sir.
Well, if you know so much, what are you doing up here acting like a suspense radio character? It may sound silly to you, but it was just that I had never seen a murderer before, alive or dead, and when I saw Sarko's body at police headquarters, I got interested.
Mr. Henderson, would you mind repeating that?
I said I got interested.
No, you said you actually saw the body of Sarko?
Sure. What's so terrific about that?
Did you see his face?
Of course.
What did he look like?
Iron gray hair, dark eyes.
Yeah. Yes. Mr. Henderson, we simply must reach an understanding. You've no idea what possibility this opens for me.
Well, I'm no mind reader.
Mr. Henderson, may I have your word that you will do nothing unreasonable if I put away this gun?
Okay.
Thank you. I must administer my eye drops. My eyes are very bad. Perhaps you've noticed.
I thought you might have a cold.
No, nothing so simple, unfortunately. Congenital weakness. There we are. Now, Mr. Henderson, my interest in all this is very sordid, I'm afraid. Money, to the extent of, shall we say, $300,000.
Oh, nice tidy little sum.
Half of that sum could be yours, Mr. Henderson.
You'll forgive me if I don't jump at such a handsome offer without knowing a little more about it.
I might have realized, I suppose, that mere lucre was not paramount to one of your position.
Let's leave paramount out of this.
Yes. But, Mr. Henderson, it so happens that I can put you in the way of quite a bit of rather special information about Sarko. I shall write several of them down for you here.
That's just fine. Write several of what down?
Names, addresses, places where you can discover what you want to know.
Okay, what's the catch?
Mr. Henderson, you must trust me.
What do you want?
I want very little. But when you've seen these people, and when what they tell you suggests that there is still more to know, come to see me. I've written that address down, too. Good night. Good hunting.
Well, by this time I was so obsessed with the thing that I actually set out to follow the itinerary of the rather sinister Mr. Edwards to the very letter. There was the man serving a life term at Sing Sing. His name was Coletti.
Well, it didn't used to be so healthy to talk about Sarko, but seeing he's dead, yeah. Yeah, I know him pretty well.
Did you ever do any business with him?
Yeah, we had one little deal. He helped me in some business I had with Senator O'Malley. Remember him?
He was chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee during the disarmament conferences after the last war.
That's right, until 1927.
Was that the year you and Sarko had your business with him?
That's right.
That was the year he was assassinated, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was quite a coincidence, Mr. Henderson. Quite a coincidence.
Sarko, huh? I just hope he didn't die easy.
I don't think he did from the looks of him.
Maybe there is some justice after all.
Are you quite sure he was a drug addict?
Huh. How do you think I first learned to take this stuff? At the convent?
Yeah, there is one guy who might talk. I never seen him, but they called him Eddie the Greek. He used to hang around Doyle's gambling place.
Well, you see, Mr. Henderson, it all turned out rather well from your point of view, didn't it?
In a way.
But there are a few little pieces of the picture still missing, eh? You see, that's why I dared hope that you'd come back to see me.
That's fine. What about Eddie the Greek?
Oh, yes, Eddie the Greek.
I hope it won't be too great a shock if I have the strong impression that Eddie the Greek is one of your pseudonyms, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, very good, Mr. Henderson. Very good indeed.
Yes, I have been called that on occasion.
Then what's the idea of the wild goose chase? You're supposed to know more about Sarko than anybody.
All in good time, Mr. Henderson, all in good time. At the moment, there is a rather more pressing matter.
No, is there?
Oh, yes. There is the little matter of the $300,000.
Look, I'm in a business where they pay pretty good dough, but nobody can earn $300,000 just overnight and be on the level.
But, my dear Mr. Henderson, there is no question of earning.
Okay, okay. You tell me.
Well, it's really quite simple, Mr. Henderson. With the information you possess, together with the information I possess, there is a very liberal and sensible gentleman of my acquaintance who will give us $300,000.
Blackmail, huh?
Well, but what possible objection can you have to the transfer of $300,000 from the pocket of one scoundrel to the pocket of another?
None, I guess, except that I just don't want to have any part of it.
Oh? Not even if it meant your coming into the possession of the final, and I might say, the most sensational part of your missing information about Sarko?
How do I know you can supply it?
Oh, I have something here in my desk which I think you might consider sufficient proof. Oh, yes, here it is. A photograph. But before you look at the face, read the writing across the bottom, please.
To my good friend Gregory Sarko from Count Orlando Montecero.
A quite famous Spanish gentleman, except that lately he's been engaged in some really very subversive activity in South America. Another face, please.
But it's Sarko.
Rather, shall we say, it is the man whose body you saw at police headquarters. But are you positive?
Of course I am.
Would you be so good as to write a few words to that effect across the face of the picture?
Why?
Because I must be sure. And even on our brief acquaintance, Mr. Henderson, I know that you would not write anything above your signature that was not absolutely true.
Sure, if it'll make you feel any better, it is true. Here.
So, now you see it, Mr. Henderson. You saw this body, you alone, except for one or two police officers with whom I confess it is a little difficult for me to deal. And the body is not that of Sarko.
And the real Sarko?
Is alive and quite well, I'm happy to say, in here in New York.
How could I meet him?
Oh, you will meet him, Mr. Henderson, when he pays us the $300,000.
By this time, I had to go through with it. I could see the whole thing on film. What a thriller. I left everything in the hands of Mr. Edwards. A meeting was arranged in a hotel room, the hour 8:30. And there we waited for the man I traced all over the underworld of New York. The murderer, spy, dope peddler, Gregory Sarko.
Not nervous, are you, Mr. Henderson?
Aren't you?
A little. Yes, I must confess. Our visitor this evening is not what you might call an easygoing man.
Hmm.
But we will not be murdered. No, we will not even be followed, at least not successfully.
Where do you go from here?
To my little apartment where you met me. It's the safest place in all New York.
You don't mind if I catch up on my notes while we wait?
Your notes?
My private file on Sarko.
Oh, of course. You know, Mr. Henderson, sometimes I fear that you might think that I've not been quite as candid with you in this matter as I might.
There are one or two little things, aren't there? Your own connection with Sarko, for instance.
Naturally, but I honestly believe that once you just... Will you stand by the door, please, Mr. Henderson? Open it when I give you the word.
Do you have to point that gun?
There will be no shooting. This gun is just in case. You may open the door now, Mr. Henderson. Come in.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Captain McNeil.
Surprised to see me?
Naturally he is. When an appointment has been carefully arranged for Mr. Henderson to meet the arch-criminal Sarko, and when that arch-criminal turns out to be none other than the illustrious Captain McNeil, naturally.
I sort of wondered how you managed to get yourself a part in this little drama, Mr. Henderson. Now I know.
Well, would you mind awfully explaining it to me?
If I were to tell you that I am not Sarko, but rather that your confederate, Mr. Edwards, is Sarko... Would that help?
Oh, I'm truly sorry, Mr. Henderson. It seems my fate to be forced from one deception to another.
Then you are Sarko.
In a word, yes. You see, Captain McNeil would scarcely have acceded to my request if he'd not feared that a third and highly respectable party were also privy to our little secret. After all, there would be ways of dealing with Sarko, but a well-known motion picture director, that would be another story. By the way, Captain, did you bring the money, please?
I did.
How convenient to deal with a police officer who also happens to have a large private fortune.
Don't you want to count it?
Oh, I can see it's close enough.
Listen, Mr. Edwards. If you think you're going to get me to play cat's paw for you, you're...
Mr. Henderson, you forget that I have your signature on the photograph of that man whom the good Captain McNeil mistakenly killed.
You see where you fit into the picture now, Mr. Henderson?
And not a very pretty picture either.
Yes, it would be most inconvenient for Captain McNeil if it were known that he had accidentally liquidated the good Count Montresero. Even though from a patriotic standpoint, it is undoubtedly an excellent thing that he did. But there might even be international complications, might there not, Captain?
Mr. Henderson, if I'd only resisted a temptation to show you that body.
If only you had, Captain McNeil.
You'll forgive me, gentlemen, if I administer my eye drops. My eyes seem to grow worse as my fortunes grow better.
And you'll forgive me if I leave now? Perhaps someday there'll be another meeting.
It could happen. Yes, who knows?
You're a hat, Captain McNeil.
Thank you. Good night.
So you're the great Sarko, eh, Mr. Edwards?
You see why I could not tell you before. Believe me, I wish to, if only because your interest was so flattering.
You know, he'll catch up with you someday, Mr. Edwards.
Captain McNeil?
Mm.
Not as long as I can prove that he killed Count Montresero.
By the way, was that just a sort of happy coincidence for you, or was it?
Not quite. I had done some business with the Count, which had turned out rather badly. Well, he was a pure Nazi agent, without doubt. In any event, I was in difficulties with the fellow, and I persuaded him that he could secure some very valuable information if he would appear in New York as Sarko, which he was unwise enough to do.
And then you tipped off Captain McNeil that Sarko was in town. You're a pretty clever boy, aren't you, Mr. Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Henderson, thank you. And now may I suggest that we return to my little flat?
We?
Under the circumstances, Mr. Henderson, I believe it would be safer for both of us. Do you like your drink, Mr. Henderson?
Oh, it's very good, thanks. Mr. Edwards, I do wish you'd put that gun away.
Oh, yes, the gun. Mr. Henderson, I've been trying to think of a way out of this dilemma all evening. I would have liked to spare you this last little deception.
What little deception?
I'm going to have to kill you.
Oh.
I am sincerely sorry. You've been a most pleasant companion, but knowing as much about me as you do...
May I finish my drink, please?
Oh, but certainly. And now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, my eye drops are in my coat in the hall. Oh, by the way, it's useless to try to escape, Mr. Henderson. This is the only way out, and the windows are barred with steel shutters.
Thank you for the information.
Edwards! Edwards!
Dead. Captain McNeil.
I take it that someone has just liquidated our friend Sarko, or Edwards, as you prefer.
Yeah, so it would seem.
Did you see it happen?
No. Did you have much trouble finding your way here?
None whatsoever, Mr. Henderson. I'm afraid I have a little confession.
You don't need to.
But I do. You remember the matter of the information on the piece of paper slipped under the hatband? The thing in your picture that I disagreed with?
I remember.
I apologize. It's a highly practical device. Highly practical. Well,
perhaps it wasn't made clear enough in the picture that the paper was rolled up into a little hard ball. I suppose it hurt your head when you put your hat on.
It did. And I found the address of this place when I removed it. You'd make a fine detective, Mr. Henderson. By the way, how much have you known?
You know, I'm kind of surprised myself. Quite a lot, as a matter of fact.
You knew about the body I showed you?
Well, I was pretty sure it wasn't Sarko, a drug addict who takes the precaution of carrying aspirin for his headaches, would certainly carry his favorite drug, too.
Mm.
I used that in a picture once myself. Don't you remember the blue canary?
So you did. I should have remembered.
And I suspected Edwards because of the eye drops. There was nothing the matter with his eyes. This particular brand of drug works on any mucous membrane, including the eyes.
Mr. Henderson, you're all right. And just what are your immediate plans?
Well, I'd kind of like to get out of here. What about the money and the photograph?
Don't let it worry you. The money and the photograph are safe.
I kind of thought so. And I suppose we can safely leave to the regular police force the question of who killed Sarko.
I think we can.
If I knew who, I'd sort of like to thank him. He did save my life, you know.
And if he knew you, I'm sure he'd want to thank you as well, because, in a way, you also saved his life.
Well, that's about all there is to the story.
Pretty exciting stuff. Be good material for one of your pictures, I'd think, Mr. Henderson.
Yeah, sure it would, sure. For that dumb studio of mine, I called a big meeting just before I left New York, and I told this story, changing a few names and places, of course. And what happened?
I don't know, Frank. It's a good story, but I don't know.
What's the matter? I think it would make a swell picture.
Public could never go for it, Frank. It's too crazy. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy it. You're entirely right, LG. Don't make sense, Frank. A thing like that couldn't happen.
Couldn't happen. Look, I'm telling you that
it's... Too arty, entirely too arty. Wouldn't gross a dime. And by the way, Frank, I wanted to talk to you about the new release. Where have you been?
Me?
Yeah, the last time we saw you, you beat it out of the projection room to see some cop, and nobody's heard a word from you for 2 weeks. Where you been?
Me? Oh, I've been around.
And so closes Sneak Preview, starring Joseph Cotton, tonight's tale of suspense. Joseph Cotton, star of the Lockheed America Ceiling Unlimited, appeared by courtesy of David O. Selznick, and will soon be seen in the all-star Selznick production, Since You Went Away.
This is Joseph Cotton. It's a great pleasure to join forces with this really excellent company whose business and pleasure it is each week to keep you in suspense. I know you'll want to be listening next week, as I will, when Sonny Tufts will be your star.
Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Sonny Tufts in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
From March of 1944, it's been Joseph Cotton starring in Sneak Preview, a program calculated to keep you in suspense. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Yesteryear, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.